Welcome to episode 433 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, I have to laugh a little bit because we did something new while we were recording this. We have our intro audio in the live chat, but I couldn't hear it because I don't want to hear the live chat. So when you press go, I was like doing the song in my head, anticipating when you were going to start talking.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure you know exactly when it's going to happen because you've listened to roughly 432 episodes of the show before.
Right.
So, yeah. Although we haven't been using this music for 433 episodes.
No.
I want to say it probably started around the time you started.
It was before that. The original music predated me even listening, and it was scary. I'm not a fan.
Alrighty. Well, let's get into the actual meat of the show here. If you want to send us some feedback, like no one did this week, which kind of surprised me with all the things we discussed last week, no feedback to discuss this week. But if you want to send us some for our next episode, you can do that by shooting an email over to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So let's jump right into our video news this week. And I want to kick this off talking about a topic that could get super technical, super nerdy, but I'm not going to let it because I don't think we're qualified enough to really get into that right now. But I want to talk about HDMI 2.1. And I want to talk about it for two reasons. Reason number one is it's been finalized. The spec has been released. It is available to manufacturers of HDMI devices. And it's got some cool stuff in it. So for one thing, it, of course, supports even higher resolution than we already have. You can do 8K video at 60 frames per second with HDMI 2.1 or 4K video at 120 frames per second. To do all of that, it has a higher bandwidth. Rating doesn't seem like the right word, but HDMI 2.1 supports up to 48 gigabits per second of bandwidth. That's insane. That is a lot of bandwidth. And then it's also got some other features like a new version of ARC. That's EARC. ARC, of course, is audio return channel. That's supposed to be better, more reliable, more consistent. That's all really good, especially for people like Richard.
Yeah, how about one that supports Atmos audio? Or, oh, here's an idea. How about one that doesn't require me also turning CEC on? I would love that.
Ooh, I would like that. I don't know if that's in there. I didn't look that closely because I kind of gave up on ARC a while ago. So I didn't look super closely. There's another cool thing about HDMI 2.1 though, and that is something called variable refresh rate. And there's actually a few things that go along with this. There's two main things that are super cool about what it can do with refresh rates. The first one is, especially if you're a PC gamer, then you've seen monitors that have variable refresh rates on them. There are two main camps that do this. There's the NVIDIA G-Sync technology, and then there's the AMD FreeSync technology. And the way that those work is you plug them into your computer, your video card and computer need to support it. And when you're usually playing a game and your frame rate is constantly, well, potentially constantly changing, if your monitor only displays at a constant frame rate, then those two don't sync up and you get weird things like screen tearing and stuff like that. If your monitor can match the frame rate that is being output by your computer, then you don't get screen tearing and everything looks way, way better. So that's already doable through DisplayPort, but this will now be part of HDMI 2.1. And where that gets really cool is Mike Ibarra said back in August when people were asking about the Xbox One X and what type of HDMI ports it would have, he said, well, it's got HDMI 2, But when the HDMI 2.1 spec gets released, then we're going to work to get it certified for that too. So it hasn't actually happened yet. The spec just got released 3 weeks ago. I think it was like November 28th. So this hasn't happened yet. But according to Mike Ibarra, they're going to be working on this. And so theoretically, you're going to be able to plug a display that supports this technology into an Xbox One X and get variable refresh rates. Now, this isn't just about gaming, which is one of the reasons why I have this in the video news. Also consider movies that we watch. Movies aren't typically shot at 60 frames per second either. They're shot at just under 24 frames per second, right? It's like 23.967 or something like that, right? Well, your TV would be able to, well, if your TV can, your TV would also be able to get that signal at that frame rate and display it perfectly. Because right now, TVs have to do weird things to deal with that weird 24 frames per second content that they're getting from movies. Another thing that it means is a lot of times when you're watching a movie and you have to like switch inputs or it starts playing that content at that different frame rate, it'll take a second or two for it to like change and adapt, and you'll get a black screen for just a little bit of time. All of that goes away because this can just immediately detect that change and start working appropriately without any wait. So this is really cool. It's not like we're going to be seeing this month. It's going to be months and months and months. And probably, in fact, I don't know of any TVs that would necessarily support this yet.
Right.
But you might have a device that does if you have an Xbox One X. So that's cool. And future-proofs you a little bit. But, you know, $500 console and then a new $2,000 TV. No big deal.
So the fact that the Xbox One X can potentially get certified to be 2.1 suggests that their device already meets the hardware specs required to make this all possible. I guess the question I would have is how many device manufacturers actually kind of, you know, future-proof is the wrong word, but
yeah,
end up providing components in their device that exceed specification in anticipation of an updated spec. If anything, I think most device manufacturers go with the least common denominator to be able to meet the spec. So I'm really bearish on the possibility that, say, existing televisions and things like that might actually get certified and then suddenly be compatible. I think this is more likely to be included in televisions that we're seeing at CES in 2019.
Yeah. I don't know. It might be worth asking. You know, we're going to be at CES. It might be worth asking some of those manufacturers, because they're all going to be displaying brand new sets, asking them if any of them support HDMI 2.1 and then which aspects of HDMI 2.1 they support. Because, yeah, the Xbox One X, I fully expect to have HDMI 2.1 support.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean it's going to support all of this stuff? No, it's probably not going to output at 8K. Right? You know, it's certainly not going to output video games at 8K.
Right.
You can be pretty certain of that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But this is all very good news because especially that variable refresh rate stuff, it can be really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move to audio. Josh, when you listen to music on your PC years ago, other than Windows Media Player, because I'm sure you loved using Windows Media Player, did you have a favorite player for your audio files? Let's just say, you know, you might have acquired some audio files from somewhere. How would you have played those?
Well, after I ripped my CDs, I had to choose an audio player that really whipped the llama's ass. Okay. Right? I mean, if we're going to pick an audio player, that's kind of like bare minimum requirements, right?
It so has of course, to whip the llama's ass, yes.
Yes. So, of course, I went with Winamp. Now, you being a Mac guy, you probably never used Winamp, but I did. And I loved Winamp. It was really good.
In the Winamp days, I was not a Mac guy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. How about that? No, I was also a Winamp user, although Winamp for me was kind of like the epitome of a trend that I hated on Windows, which was the ridiculous need to skin your Windows to look unlike everything else in Windows.
Right.
That used to make me absolutely crazy. All right. Why are we talking about Winamp, Josh?
Well, it's not because we're still using Winamp. That's for sure. No, instead, it is because the folks over at Plex have released a new app as part of a new program. And this new app is called PlexAmp. And it's greatly inspired by Winamp. And this is part of their new Plex Labs program. Plex Lab is basically just a fancy name for the Plex company to allow their developers to work on other more passion projects. And when they're good and useful to the wider audience, release them through this program. And PlexAmp is the first app to be released as part of that. And it's just an audio player. Plex will play your audio files just fine. It does an okay job at that. And it obviously serves them all up through the Plex media server. But PlexAmp is just a music player, greatly inspired by Winamp. It runs on PC and Mac. I guess that's one big difference from Winamp is that it runs on Mac. But it'll play pretty much anything. You log into this thing, you play pretty much anything in your music library. It'll direct play it. It doesn't have to do transcoding. It has all sorts of advanced audio playback features that you would expect, like gapless playback. It'll do soft transitions. It has all of this cool logic built in for figuring out just how to transition between tracks. It'll do auto volume leveling for when you're listening to music across different albums that aren't necessarily all at the same level, so that you're not super quiet from one track and then blowing out your eardrums on the next track. And then maybe one of the things that reminds us the most of Winamp, it has visualizers too. It has all of those fancy like bars that are hopping up and down or just crazy fractal looking things. And I think there's, I don't know, eight or so different visualizers, and it just kind of works. So you and I have both had a couple of days to try this out, but I also don't know that either of us are necessarily, well, maybe you are. So for me, I was like, all right, I got to try this out, but this isn't really my cup of tea because I don't listen to my own personal music collection anymore. I just use Spotify. But I know you've been going through this musical journey to try to figure out where you're going to get your music from. So how does PlexAmp fit into your music listening lifestyle?
I'll admit I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't know if this is something that I'll use in the long term. I actually use iTunes if I want to play my library locally on my PC, or my Mac. If I want to play music in a room, then I use Sonos to play my music library. So, you know, the ability to have another program that does that is, I guess, nice. But I already, like, you know, we had a little bit of a discussion in our internal Slack channel about this. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about was that this doesn't necessarily seem like it serves a purpose anymore for most people, that most people are listening to music and such on their mobile devices or on their house speakers or whatever. I am one of the few people that actually listens to audio on my computer, but I always have iTunes open. That's how I do that. So I guess I could always have this open, but just like Winamp, it's a little tiny window. Now, there are multiple sizes that you can pick from, but it's a little tiny window and it shows you a limited amount of information. And back in the days of EGA and VGA screens with Windows 3 and 3.1, that was really cute. Nowadays, I want to see much more information in one fell swoop to be able to quickly and easily browse my library. So I don't know that this is going to be a long-term thing for me right now. I just wanted to test it out and see what it was like. I will tell you that the gapless playback and the transitions are, for lack of a better word, magical. I was really impressed by how well that worked, because typically that sort of transition from song to song is usually really clumsy with most music services. Even Sonos, a relatively pricey solution for playing back music, doesn't do a great job of that.
Interesting. So the playback experience is nice, but the user experience maybe doesn't really fit what you're looking for. And frankly, yeah, it still lacks a lot of polish, but it's kind of a pet project. It is by no means done, but it's totally free. And if you've already got a Plex server set up with your music library all configured, then there's no reason not to check this out. And some of the advanced features that they've got built into it around different radio discovery features, like different ways of listening to your own music, listening to it in chronological order from dates released, or just listening to a particular artist, things like that. Some of those features are eventually only going to be available to PlexPass subscribers, but for the next few months, they're available to everybody. So check this out. There's no reason not to, and let us know what you think of PlexAmp.
The other thing that we'll give you as a pro tip is, if you're trying to figure out how you do anything in this application on the Windows platform, look for the tray icon, and there's a menu available through that. On the Mac platform, look for the menu bar icon, and there's a menu available through that. Otherwise, it would seem like there's no functionality in this thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's move on to another bit of audio news. Amazon Music, and this I think is particularly relevant because this service, this Amazon Music Storage service, is a service that we recently recommended to people who are looking for a way to play back their personal music on devices like the Amazon Echo. Now, fortunately, we discussed just last episode a new solution for that, because Amazon Music Storage Service is going away. Now, if you're not quite sure what that is, it's Amazon's service that allowed you to upload your own music to Amazon servers, and then you could listen to it through the Amazon Music apps on PC, on mobile, on, I imagine, Echo devices, I imagine on Fire TV, although I've actually never used a Fire TV, so I don't know. All of this is going away. If you were just a free plan user, because there has been a free plan forever, I don't remember the limits, but you could upload some amount of free tracks. And if you're in that free plan, already they've disabled the ability to upload new music to the service. And your music will only be available until January of 2019. So you've got a little bit over a year for it to be available. If you're on a paid plan, then you can continue to use it completely normally. That includes uploading your music and all of that stuff until your plan ends. If your plan is about to end and you want to keep using this, then you better re-up your subscription soon, because after January 15th of 2018, so in about a month from now, you won't be able to renew, and it'll just be done whenever your subscription expires. Once it expires, you'll no longer be able to upload music. You'll only be allowed to have 250 tracks in the cloud. I have no idea how it picks which ones, but once it's picked which 250 you get to keep, the rest of them are removed. And then a year after your subscription expires, all of your music will be gone. So within a couple of years, all of your music is going to be gone, except for the tracks that you've purchased.
I don't even understand why they're bothering with the 250. That seems ridiculous. If you're going to get rid of literally thousands of songs, but leave 250 there, I just don't get it. You know, Tony in the chat is saying how he uses this paid service and they haven't notified him. And to the best that he can tell, there isn't any easy way to download all of the stuff that you've put up there if you want to make sure that you have everything.
Oh,
you know, the way that you normally download is by album. Album by album is how the Amazon Music download works. So I'm really frustrated by this. I get that this is not necessarily their core business, and so maybe it just wasn't economical for them, but this is kind of a lesson. I don't mean to be, you know, the storm cloud here, but this is kind of a lesson about cloud services, is that they are ephemeral. Companies may change or eliminate them at any time, and we have to be careful about our dependencies on them. So just like with photos, don't make an online music storage locker be the only place you have your music or the only place you have your photos, because that is very, very dangerous. What's interesting to me here is that I would think that Amazon could have used this to their advantage in a way that I imagine Google is, by mining the music that you post so that they can better figure out what music to try to sell you. And I would think that that would be worth something to them, but I guess it's not worth enough.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess not. All right. Well, we will look for more information as that may come out. This is brand new news today. So I'm kind of surprised that like Tony in our chat, paid subscribers haven't even been officially notified yet. That's kind of crazy. They need to get on notifying people of that right away.
Yeah. I mean, in all fairness, I think this news came out today. So a lot of times getting word out to customers is not necessarily aligned with how you're updating information on your website or getting press releases out or anything like that. So who knows, but still, right. Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our gaming news this week. Not a lot of real news here. Basically, just an update on your typical weekly and monthly deals. This week, deals with gold, very light again. And again, I expected this is because Microsoft will be doing another huge sale right at the end of the year. They normally do right around Christmas up through the end of the year, because that's when everybody's getting new Xboxes for the holidays. But they haven't announced it yet, at least not that I've noticed. So this week, not very many games for sale at all, but two worth pointing out. One of them is called Dear Esther, and this is a particularly relevant game to anyone who also listens to one of our other podcasts, Story Players. Dear Esther is basically the game known for being the starting point of walking simulators. It was the first game that was in the genre of What Remains of Edith Finch or Firewatch, and you know, all of these types of games that don't have tons of action. You're basically just walking around and experiencing a story. It's like that. And right now it is $2. That's it. So you can go ahead and pick that up. And then the other one worth pointing out is Injustice 2. This is a fighting game in the DC Comics universe. So fighting with, you know, the Joker and Batman and, I don't know, lots of DC Comics characters that I don't really know or care about because I've never been into DC Comics at all. That game is 50% off. And what's somewhat unusual is that all versions of it are 50% off. There's different versions that come with different levels of DLC characters and all that stuff. So the cheapest version is $25. And I have heard really, really good things about Injustice 2 as just being a really good fighting game. And then our Xbox Live games with gold for December. These are all free for the entire month. We've still got Warhammer, the End Times, Vermintide. That's that game on Xbox One that is similar to Left 4 Dead 2, but more of a fantasy setting. And then now that we're in the second half of the month, now through January 15th on Xbox One, you get Back to the Future, the game. And for the rest of this month on the 360 side, but available on Xbox One through backwards compatibility, is Marlo Briggs and The Mask of Death.
I do want to mention that earlier today, this is Tuesday when we're recording this, I had problems trying to download Back to the Future from the website. So typically I get these on the Xbox site, and the page for that game was just returning an error. So don't know what was going on there. I was able to get Marlo Briggs without any problem, though.
You're never going to play it. Okay, cool. So keep trying.
But Back to the Future? I might.
Okay, you let me know.
All right, well, that is it for our gaming news. So, you know, a couple weeks back, we were talking about the Harman Kardon Invoke when it came out. And Harman was good enough to send us a review unit, and you have been messing with that for the last couple of weeks. What's your verdict? What are you thinking about this thing?
This has been a tough product for me to review, because there's definitely some good things about it, but there's a lot of downsides too, especially when you compare it to the other devices that it is directly competing against, like the Amazon Echo, the Google Home, all of those types of devices. So there are some nice things. Let's get into the higher level stuff that this thing does. First off, it makes Skype calls. If you're a big Skype user, that's awesome. Like it makes Skype calls to other Skype users. It'll use Skype to make phone calls out to just regular phone numbers. You know, so you've got a really nice Skype speakerphone. None of the other devices, like the Echo and the Google Home, do that. So that alone, you know, maybe you just want a really awesome Skype speakerphone. Well, maybe that's it. In terms of music, because it is a speaker, it's got support for some services, but not as many as some of the others. It supports iHeartRadio, Spotify, thankfully, and TuneIn Radio. You wouldn't expect it to support iTunes or Google Play Music, obviously, or even Amazon Music for pretty obvious reasons. But it also doesn't support Pandora. Come on, really? Pandora?
That's supposed to be coming, right?
It's supposed to be coming, but we don't know when. And this thing's been out for a month and a half at this point. I don't know. I'm not sure how long we should be expected to wait for one of the most common cross-platform media services that's available. Still not out there. Another really common use case for these types of things, smart home control. I think it does well here. It supports Insteon devices, which is what I use. It supports Wink, smart things. If you've got Nest devices, it'll support that. And it works with Hue bulbs. So in terms of smart home, it's pretty decent. Like there's a lot of smaller one-off things that it won't support. Like, you know, if you just have an Ecobee or an August lock, or, you know, a lot of these little one-off things it doesn't support, which that's another one of those areas where the Echo really throttles the competition, because it just happens to have skills for basically everything. And that whole smart home space is kind of a giant mess anyway. So if you've got all of your stuff in one big ecosystem, it's probably in Wink, SmartThings, or Insteon. And if so, then you're sitting pretty good. But if you've got all of these little one-off things all over the place, you're probably not going to be able to control them with the Harman Kardon Invoke. It is a speaker, again, so you're hoping for a really good sound, and for $200, it better sound nice. This was a really interesting area for me. It sounds really, really clear. It is not a muddy sound at all. When I compare this to a Google Home, or obviously any of the lesser things like a Google Home Mini, it destroys the Google Home Mini, but that's a $50 tiny little speaker. But it doesn't have great bass. Like I'm really not impressed with the bass output of the Harman Kardon Invoke at all. I brought my wife in to do a blind sound test. Fortunately, Spotify Connect makes this really easy. I put the Invoke and a Google Home right next to each other in my kitchen, which I understand kitchens, not the best place to be listening to music, but it's also the place that most people are using devices like this to listen to music.
Exactly.
So I set them right next to each other and I was just going back and forth. I tried a few different types of music and I said, all right, you know, now listen to this. Tell me which one you like more. And she said, I like B. I don't know which one it was. But it was the Google Home. She liked the sound of the Google Home better. And I did too. And that really shocked me because the Google Home is definitely a muddier sound, but it's because it has more bass. Like, it's partly because it has more bass. Mm-hmm. And the way that it produces that bass is muddy, but it actually has bass. And the Invoke, just the bass isn't there. And I really enjoy bass. And it's just not there.
Mm.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm a candidate for Beats headphones. I don't know. But like, I feel kind of ashamed admitting that I preferred the muddy bass over the super clear sound that had very little bass. But I do. Sorry. So that's my preference. The hardware itself looks really nice. I mean, I guess that's obviously very subjective, but I think it looks nice. It's taller than I think most of the competition, so maybe that might limit where it'll fit, you know, if you're trying to fit it underneath your cabinets or something like that. I mean, it's not that tall. It's
like, maybe it's not that big.
It's probably a foot tall, but it's definitely taller than an Echo, and it's way taller than a Google Home. So it's something to consider. It also has a really short power cord. I don't really understand why. It's like a 2-foot power cord. It's ridiculously short, but extension cords aren't that big of a deal. So I can't really knock it for that. In terms of the normal day-to-day stuff that you might use one of these for, like reminders and setting timers and stuff like that, works fine as you would expect. And then in terms of talking to it, it sounds really good. Like, I really like Cortana as a voice assistant. It sounds really good. The speech sounds far more natural than Google's assistant does to me. So I really like that. You know, some of the sillier things, like asking it to tell you jokes, things that kids love to do, it's really not great at. Like, it has lots of jokes, but they're all nerdy science jokes that my 8-year-old doesn't get. You know, she doesn't get jokes that involve quantum physics or I don't know if it actually, no, there's no way it tells the UDP joke. Maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't. They're all super nerdy or like computer science or other types of science and math jokes. And little kids just won't even get those jokes. And then the two biggest things that go against the Harman Kardon Invoke that have absolutely nothing to do with the speaker, it's all about Cortana. Cortana doesn't have support for multiple users. It can't tell the difference between me and my wife or my kids. We're all the same to it. So we can't set up different Spotify accounts like I can do with the Google Assistant devices. It doesn't know my calendar versus my wife's calendar. That's kind of a showstopper. If you have more than one person in your house, it's kind of hard to recommend this.
Yeah, and that's something that both Google and Amazon's products can do now.
Right. And then the other really big one, of course, is the Amazon Echo ecosystem has over 20,000 skills, I think. Basically skills for anything you could possibly imagine. Cortana doesn't. Cortana's like 150, 200 maybe. I don't remember the exact count, but it's not a ton. And most of them are garbage. Most of them are like, here's sounds, you know, here's the fight song for this college team, and here's another one for the fight song for this college team. And 40 of them are fight songs for different college teams or you know, whatever. It, just stuff like that that's just not that useful. I expected the skills to be a lot more abundant because Microsoft worked hard to make it really easy to port Amazon's voice assistant skills over to Cortana skills. And it seems like people just don't care. And maybe it's because this Harman Kardon Invoke is the only speaker that's available on the market for this type of thing. So market penetration has got to be incredibly low, especially considering it's one of the most expensive. At $200, it's $100 more than the run-of-the-mill Echo. It's $50 more than the Echo Plus. It's $70 more than a Google Home. And when you start thinking about Echo Dots and Google Home Minis, it's way, way more expensive. So this is a tough one to recommend. Like if you are hardcore in the Microsoft ecosystem, you don't care about some of the one-off skills that, you know, maybe you don't have random one-off smart home devices, then and you're only living in Spotify or something, then hey, it's good. Like it does a lot of things really well. I love using this thing to control my Insteon stuff. You know, I use it all the time to turn my lights on and off, things like that. I like listening to music on it. I like setting timers on it and reminders and things like that. It does all of that well. I like that because I'm in Windows 10 all day long, I can set reminders in Cortana on my PC for, you know, a half hour after I know I'm going to be home. And when I'm home, I hear that reminder on the Invoke. That's cool.
Nice.
But there's just so many other things missing here. And almost none of them are Harman Kardon's fault. They're almost all lay at Microsoft and their implementation of how Cortana works and their third-party ecosystem.
Yeah, that's really frustrating. I, as far as the skills, I really expected the skills to come in fast as this thing rolled out so that they could get some real adoption here. And if that meant that Microsoft was going to be, you know, supplementing those somehow, then I expected that they would do that the same way that they did with a lot of early Windows applications when they came out with Windows 8 and Windows Phone. But that does not seem to be happening, at least not at any notable pace. And frankly, I think developers are like they are with everything Microsoft these days, sitting back and seeing what happens before they decide to invest their time and money in this platform because, and I hate to say this, but it has the Microsoft stink on it.
I don't think I would use that as the reason. I think it's just more of, I think the bigger reason is these ecosystems just don't have wide usage. You know, Windows Phone had tiny market share, so there was no reason to make apps for Windows Phone. Cortana on a speaker has very tiny market share, so there's no reason to make Cortana skills. UWP, you know, Windows 10 apps, people have got web apps and just regular desktop apps, so why spend the time to do that? I don't think it's Microsoft stink. I think it's just there isn't a market reason to build these things.
Well, but that's what I mean, right? Is that when it comes to entertainment devices other than the Xbox, Microsoft has a proven history of failing to penetrate the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Well, that's unfortunate. I will say I love the look of this thing. I did like the sound when I heard it in the store. This isn't really for me because I don't, you know, base my home or work life in a Windows environment. Really, the only Windows devices that I have are for testing or my media center PC. And that's pretty much it these days.
Right.
All right. Well, moving on, we have one more story in the industry. And you may remember a couple years ago that Redbox paired up with, of all companies, Verizon to come out with an on-demand video service. And that was actually a part of the Ultraviolet ecosystem for a while, or at least they had at one point announced that it was going to be. And then about 2 years after it launched, they killed it. Didn't really take off. And then we heard rumblings that Redbox might be trying it again. Well, guess what? It's here.
Now, wasn't the service that they had back a few years ago, wasn't that more of a subscription service, sort of like Netflix?
It was a weird model. It was a different model than anyone else was doing at the time. I believe they allowed you to purchase movies, but they also allowed you to rent movies. And I think they did it with something like credits, if I remember correctly. Like you paid a certain amount of credits, or you paid a certain amount per month and you got a certain number of credits, and you could use those credits either toward watching movies online or toward actually renting discs from your local Redbox machine.
Oh.
And you even had the ability to reserve movies online so that you could then pick them up in the Redbox machine. Why you would ever do that, I don't understand. But
right.
I mean, at the time, maybe people didn't have the bandwidth. In any event, we knew that they were going to be coming back with something, or at least they had announced at one point that they were going to come back with a new service. I think this was like a year ago we heard this, and now it is here. It is available for Android, iOS, Apple TV, Chromecast, and Roku, and it's even on my LG WebOS TV. So I imagine they must also be supporting the popular TV platforms like LG and Samsung. What noticeably isn't here are the consoles.
Yeah, there's no Xbox, there's no PlayStation, there's no Nintendo Switch, none of that. So, I mean, you've got plenty of ways to get access to this, but I guess game consoles were not high on their priority list. I would imagine that if this service gets any traction at all, they'll start to work on those apps, or maybe they're already working on them. They just weren't quite ready for launch, maybe?
Yeah, maybe? I don't know. I don't really understand. So what I think is really funny about this is in the most recent / upcoming version of Home On, which is going to be the fireside chat that I had with some of the other hosts from technology.fm. One of the things we talked about in the video space was that the day of the random video streaming store was over, that many companies had realized that this just wasn't lucrative. And here we are with a company that's already tried this and failed doing it again. I don't get it.
This news hit, or at least I saw it, the same day that I was listening to that episode of that show. And I was like, wait, what about Redbox? They're back in the space.
Yeah, it's so weird. They're doing rentals and purchases. They're doing TV shows and movies. I just don't get it. I don't understand what they think is going to differentiate them from everything else that's out there and multiple versions of those. Backed by the studios themselves, who have tons of money, have failed.
I don't know. I was trying to read different industry takes on this, and Engadget was trying to say that Redbox has early access to some things for in terms of new releases. So you would theoretically be able to rent things from Redbox before you'd be able to rent from Vudu or Amazon. I looked and I didn't see anything that was available on Redbox that wasn't also available on Amazon. So, then the other thing is, well, maybe it's cheaper. Like that's gotta be the hook, but it's not. And in some cases it's more expensive. TV shows in terms of purchasing a single episode, it's the same. It's $2 for an SD copy of an episode. It's $3 for an HD copy. But when I looked at various seasons of TV shows, they were more expensive than buying them on Amazon. And then for movie rentals, they were all about the same. You know, for new releases, it was $6 to rent them. But but purchasing it again, typically more expensive. Like maybe it would be $15 to buy a movie on Amazon and $20 to buy it from Redbox. So I don't really understand why anyone is going to choose this over Amazon or Vudu or Google Play or iTunes or, like you said, any of the other big guys that are already out there.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. My advice, don't. Because who knows what's going to happen to those titles if this fails again.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you want to rent, go for it. And maybe one thing that's slightly different from some of those guys is that when you rent these, you can download them so that you can take them on a plane. I'm not sure if all of those other services support downloading, but this one does, so that's good. But yeah, I think your advice of not buying, yeah, absolutely, don't buy, because you don't know if these licenses are going to go away in a couple of years when Redbox decides, yeah, we can't continue this.
Crazy. I just don't get it.
Right. That makes two of us. All right. Well, that does it for our news for this week. Richard, let's get into what's going on in our entertainment centers.
I got a new present.
Really?
Yeah.
Already? Why?
Yeah. Yeah. So I received a new 4K HDR capable Fire TV as the holiday present for my company this year.
Oh, nice. And that's your first Amazon Fire TV device, right?
Well, no, it's not actually. I had the really cheap Fire TV stick when it first came out for $30 or something like that.
Yep, I remember that.
And it was a dog. It was really, really slow, and I never really used it for much. This, however, I'm really excited about. I'm not ultimately going to be using it for 4K. What I'm probably going to do is throw this in my suitcase and take it with me on the road, because what this can do is it allows you to log into third-party networks that have a web-based login screen. And most of these streaming boxes just can't support that. That's one thing that Amazon's done really well. And this device is well-powered, it's snappy, it provides access to all of the usual services, well, except for YouTube starting at the beginning of the year. And so I expect that this is just going to be the thing that I take with me to a hotel room. I'm really excited about it. And of course, it also meant that I had the opportunity to log into all of my services again.
You ought to be really good at it by now.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting very, very good at it. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So there is one advantage I can think of with this. You can probably, if you wanted to rent or purchase a movie from Amazon at your TV, you can probably do it through this device.
Yes, that is true. That is absolutely true. And now, since when I purchase a movie through the Amazon store, it would also, in all likelihood, depending on the studio it comes from, be then a part of my Vudu and Apple TV libraries. That's something I might be more inclined to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, good thing. Also, I have been not watching as much television. This is 2 weeks of viewing, and my list is not very long. I've caught up on Big Bang Theory and Shameless. I finished Game of Thrones Season 1. Dirk Gently Season 2 has ended. I have not heard yet if Dirk Gently is getting a third season, but Alan in the chat is saying that it is not. So that makes me sad because I've enjoyed this show. We started Stranger Things Season 2. We haven't really gotten very far in that. And of course, I will be watching Crown at some point, just have not really gotten around to it. Been watching a lot of YouTube and a lot of news again because, yeah, the news. And on the music front, my Deezer trial ended and I didn't really care. But I noticed that Amazon was having a 3 months for 99 cents a month trial run if you haven't previously subscribed to them. So I signed up for that and I am now using Amazon Unlimited. And I will tell you, from the perspective of using that on Sonos and most specifically controlling Sonos from my Echo devices, Amazon is seamless because it basically gives me access to everything I would want directly with speech or on the Sonos controller. So I'm really happy with this so far. We'll need to see, you know, how it goes over the next couple of months, but so far so good. Also, I celebrate Christmas and the Christmas music is out, which basically means that I had to put a shortcut into the Christmas genre so that I didn't have to go digging for it every time that I wanted to go play some Christmas music. But we have those set up now on Sonos and been playing that. At some point in time, I need to share my top 10 favorite Christmas songs. I have a playlist somewhere. Need to do that. I did that last year through Twitter. And I am still, largely because I've been listening to more music than I normally would, but at this time of the year, that's what I do. I'm still a week behind on my podcast. Dude. Really frustrating. Yeah, I know. I know.
Get with it, man.
I know. So that's what's going on in my entertainment center. How about you, Josh?
Well, I was going to say not a ton, but that wouldn't entirely be true. I spent a lot of time in front of my TV this weekend, but it was entirely playing video games. So I played a fair amount of NHL, which is not surprising to anybody at all. Also played some PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, PUBG as it's colloquially referred to. But before I get into that, one thing that I meant to talk about last week and didn't is I got that PlayStation 4 a few weeks ago and Horizon Zero Dawn and started playing that. And as I expected, the PlayStation 4 interface is not really anything to write home about. It works, but it's not really anything spectacular. I don't hate it, but it also is not very different at all from the interface from the last PlayStation device I used, which was a PlayStation Portable that I got in 2008, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Same sort of interface as that device from 8 years ago. So it's fine, I guess, but it's not really, there's just not a lot of cool things to it. So whatever. But Horizon Zero Dawn, that game is cool. That game is really, really good. And I've enjoyed every single moment of playing that game. So if you've got a PlayStation 4 and for some reason you haven't played Horizon Zero Dawn yet, go and get that. I'm not super far into it. Maybe, I don't know, 6 hours, 5-6 hours. Not really sure. I didn't actually play any last weekend because it just didn't work out. But yeah, good game. Now, I do want to hit on PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. We briefly talked about this last week. This dropped just last Tuesday, the day that we recorded the last episode. I hadn't gotten a chance to play it yet. I have now. Yeah, this game is far from perfect on the Xbox. But like we discussed last week, it is a game preview game. It is absolutely a preview game. It's not perfect. It has its issues. I've played on an Xbox One S and an Xbox One X. It is a different experience on both of them. The One X, it definitely looks better. It definitely runs better. But there are still issues. There are bigger issues on all platforms. You know, I've had it crash on me on both platforms. I've had it, especially on my One X. I'm not really sure why. I frequently, during the menus, will get a message that says that my controller has been disconnected. It's not disconnected. It still works. I can still go through the menus. They're just harder to see because of the giant error message in the middle of the screen. And then once I get into an actual game, the message goes away and everything's fine. The frame rate chugs like crazy at the very beginning while you're parachuting. Doesn't really matter. Once you're on the ground, the frame rate kind of levels off. Is it perfect? Does it run 100% smooth? Nope, it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. And if that sort of thing bothers you, then maybe you should wait. But if you can deal with that, the experience is still there. The experience, I had a match where it came down to me and one other guy. And my heart was pounding, trying to be the winner of this match. To go from 100 people down to 2, and you're in a tiny circle fighting for your life, it is intense. And it's great. It is really, really good. So I recommend it if you can deal with the fact that it is not a polished or perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. It's still a lot of fun, though. So check that out. It's $30 if you want it. Or the really, really expensive way to get it for free, if you buy an Xbox One X, you get a copy of PUBG for free. So spend $500 and get a $30 game. There you go. Sounds like a great deal.
Or buy a $500 game and get a free Xbox with it.
That's an even better way of looking at it. I like it. All right. And then just another quick reminder, we are only a couple of weeks away from CES, which, God, when I say it like that, it really makes me stress out and freak out because I feel like we have so much to plan for. And because we're going to be there. So expect lots of coverage from us at CES. And, you know, if you're going to be there, let us know. And if there's particular things you want us to be checking out, let us know, because we're going to be all over Las Vegas talking with tons and tons of companies. So let us know exactly what you want to key in on. And if you've got some crazy, weird question that needs to be asked of one of these companies that no one else is asking and you need the answer to it, let us know, because we'll be there. We can ask them whatever crazy questions you guys come up with, or the crazy questions we come up with.
And CES time means that we're coming up on the end of the year. So this is a reminder that next week is the week between Christmas and New Year's, and we will not have a show next week, but we will be back after the new year before going to CES.
Right, exactly. And I'm going to guess that we're going to do some predictions there, because there's probably not going to be much news in between Christmas and CES, because everyone's going to be waiting for CES to make their announcements. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at Digi Media Zone, D-I-G-I Media Zone. If you're on Facebook, you can like our page over at facebook.com/the DMZ. And we've got some other podcasts for you to check out here at the DMZ. Richard's got one all about home automation and control technology. It is called Home On. What is going on with the latest episode of Home On?
Well, I mentioned earlier that the most recent version, which will be out in, well, it may be out by the time you listen to this, I'm not sure, is the episode that I did with the guys from the other technology.fm podcasts. So that includes Jason and Seth from Home Tech FM and Mike Wolf from the Smart Home Show and Smart Kitchen Show. We get together each year. This is the third year we're doing it. And we review what's happened in the smart home over the past year and look ahead. We had a good time. As always, my edit of that will be in the Home On feed. And then right after that, starting the new year, will be my episode with CNET's Megan Wallerton from the CNET Smart Home.
Very cool. Well, I don't have a new episode of Story Players to talk about just yet, but there will be one very, very soon. And that is because episode 3 of Life is Strange Before the Storm was released today. So Joe is playing it probably right now as we're recording this. I will be playing it probably tomorrow or Thursday. And then we're going to get together and record our thoughts on that prior to the weekend. So we will get that out to you guys as soon as humanly possible, as that is the finale, the conclusion of Life is Strange Before the Storm. So look for that very soon. And then when we record Entertainment 2.0, we do this live. We use Mixer to do it, and you can be a part of that. There's a chat room, there's video, there's audio. It's a lot of fun, and it's on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, usually. Follow us on Twitter to know for sure when those live shows are going to happen. But that's going to do it for episode 433. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.